Welcome to the Raving Patients Podcast, hosted by Dr. Lin Tao. If you're looking for ways to use the power of your online reputation, dominate your marketing online, or just grow your office in general, you're in the right place. So sit back, relax, and prepare for lots of great takeaways with the reviews doctor himself and his knowledgeable lineup of guests. The Raving Patients Podcast. Real dentist, real stories, real solutions.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of the Raving Patients Podcast. As you know, I'm your host, Dr. Lin Tao, and I hope everybody's doing well as they listen to this podcast. It's being recorded in beginning of February 2021. There was a massive snowstorm hitting the Northeast, and it's been greatly affecting some of the practices out there in terms of production and people making their way into the office. Today's episode is going to be relating to smart student loan repayment strategies for dental professionals. As you know, many of our colleagues are hit with a ton of student debt getting out of dental school, and I have an expert on ways to help you repay those and strategies to be able to do that. So today's guest is Mark Johnson. Mark Johnson is a founder of Student Loans RX and a wealth advisor with RBF Wealth Advisors in St. Louis, Missouri. Mark has spent several thousands of hours educating and helping many emerging dental professionals create plans to address their student loan debt within the context of an overall financial plan. Upon realizing that there is over 7,000 dental school graduates and residents entering the workforce every year, with anywhere from $300,000 to $700,000 or more in student loan debt, Mark knew he had to do something to help them. Prior to the COVID-19 outbreak, Mark visited between 10 to 12 dental schools each year, educating students on the various student loan repayment strategies, and has attended a number of ASDA and other regional dental conferences. While his focus is on helping dental professionals, Mark also works with other healthcare professionals graduating with large six-figure student loan balances. Mark's 3 decades in the investment and financial planning industry and his in-depth knowledge of the various federal and private student loan repayment programs allows him to create custom plans for his clients based on their desired career path, associate, public health, practice ownership, and residency, and other financial goals, including insurance and investment planning. So please welcome to the Raving Patients Podcast, Mark Johnson. Mark, thanks for joining me today.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
As I told you prior, you know, I am not someone who had student loans. I was fortunate getting out of school in 1999 that my parents had footed the bill, and I did not have loans to be repaid. But as time has gone on, you know, students are faced with more and more student debts, almost to a point that it's hard to believe sometimes what they're leaving school with, and the I would call the nut they have to pay back just on loans when they don't even have a practice, they don't have a home or anything else. So this is obviously a big problem to deal with. So why don't you kind of expand on your bio a little bit, talk to the listeners about, you know, what you do, how you do it, and then we can jump into the speaking points that we wanted to cover today.
Sure. Well, thanks again for having me on today. Yeah, you're very fortunate to come out of dental school. I know it was a few years ago without student loan debt, and up until about 7 years ago, Len, I was completely ignorant. I'd heard that there was a student loan crisis, but it hadn't touched me personally, hadn't touched my family, and frankly, my investment clients hadn't raised that issue with me either about their children. So I was completely ignorant, and having been in the financial services business at that point for almost over 20 years, the genesis of kind of how things got started for us is I got invited to do an investment presentation to a group of orthodontic residents here in St. Louis. We have a pretty robust dental residency programs here. We got orthodontics, endodontics, periodontics, pediatric dentistry. And so I got invited to do an investment presentation. This was 7 years ago. I did not mention the word student loans one time in my presentation. I didn't know anything about student loans, had no idea what these residents didn't at that time even care, frankly, because I didn't know. I was just completely ignorant. after that investment presentation, about half of that year's graduating residents wanted to visit with me about investing once they graduated. And then as I started to understand their personal financial situation and that they were graduating with between $400,000 and $750,000 in student loans, I mean, my first response was, well, that was a waste of a lunch hour. They're not going to have any money to invest, you know, for many, many years. But then as I started really digging deeper in, I thought, well, certainly there must be some resources to help you figure out, you know, how to pay that back, because I could sense that was a real big burden that they were carrying into their careers. And they said, no, we're pretty much left up to our own to figure this out. And I thought, well, that's odd. I said, certainly, you know, there's 300,000-400,000 financial advisors in the country, and there must be some organizations that help with this piece of the financial plan, because if you're graduating with $400,000 to $700,000 in student loan debt, obviously that's a significant financial planning issue. It's just not something that I had, you know, offered my clients, as it just didn't come up. And so I started poking around prior to starting my wealth management practice in 2009. I had a corporate job in the investment business, and for 20 years, my customers were stockbrokers and financial advisors. So I had a large network of people all over the country, and I started poking around to find out, you know, are there any licensed financial advisors that are offering, you know, student loan repayment planning? First, I looked in, obviously, St. Louis, couldn't find anyone. Then I expanded my search out wider. I found a couple of people, but they were more focused on, you know, debt management as opposed to kind of comprehensive wealth planning. And so that was the genesis of Student Loans RX 7 years ago, totally changed my business. I spend probably 90% of my time working with emerging dental professionals, also some additional healthcare professionals, you know, MDs, pharmacists come out with a lot of student loan debt. Veterinarians come out with a lot of student loan debt. So it's changed my business. And so what we do is we take the concepts of traditional financial planning, and we, because if you have $400,000 to $700,000 in student loan debt, whatever you decide to do with your student loan debt, when it's that large, is going to impact all of the other areas of your financial life. You know, should you buy a home? Should you continue renting? What should be the priority? Paying down student loan debt, buying a practice, investing. So you've got all these competing financial priorities. And that's why, in our view, the best way to approach student loan repayment planning is in the context of an overall financial plan. It's not a one-off. It's not a one-off event. If you've got $400,000 to $700,000 in student loan debt, first of all, you're probably not going to have one strategy from the time you graduate until you make that last payment. You might use, and most of our clients do use, a couple of strategies. I would say a short to intermediate term strategy. And then once they're settled in their careers, we pivot to a second strategy oftentimes. And that's the strategy they stay on to pay off their student loan debt. So I didn't enter student loan repayment planning because this was a market that I, you know, had been dealing with in the past. My clients prior to 7 years ago were, you know, traditional investment type clients, some, you know, retirement planning, getting, you know, clients getting close to retirement or in retirement. You know, the bulk of my income still today comes from investment management. So that's the core of our business. And that's allowed me, frankly, to create, you know, the second business track, if you will, in helping emerging dental professionals, because I'm not relied. We charge a fee for our service, but it barely covers our time. And so our goal is to help them put together that comprehensive plan, make sure they're on the right track in terms of that their student loan repayment planning is going to complement their career path and not be an obstacle to their career path. And so that's what we do.
You know, that's really interesting. Like I said, not being in the position to have to worry about, and I say worry about student loan debt, I actually had taken out a small loan and paid it back within a couple of months. Just it was a couple thousand dollars for something I needed in school, and that was my extent of student loans during dental school. So certainly not my forte and not something I can relate to. And I told you before we started that I didn't realize how fortunate I was until I heard all the horror stories from my classmates. You know, because I was in my early 20s, and you know, you just don't really realize how fortunate you are until you enter the real world, as I like to say. So you know, student loan debt is a big problem, especially managing the money. And as you said, it really is going to determine how they buy a home, buy a practice, you know, invest. So in your opinion, you know, before we get into specific things related to the student loan repayments and everything else, you know, if someone came to you and said, okay, I'm going to be, you know, $500,000 in debt. I'm getting a job after school. I obviously want to put money away for investments. I want to, you know, I'm thinking about purchasing a home. I also want to be a practice owner, not necessarily an associate. You know, how do you put into place a plan that accomplishes all these things and still allows them to live a relatively, you know, normal lifestyle?
Sure. So the first thing I would ask them is, you know, give me a timeline, because, you know, when we're trying to plan and, you know, take a look at these competing financial goals, I want a timeline. So for example, when do you see yourself buying a practice? Is that 2 to 3 years out? Is that 5 to 6 years out? You don't know. So I try to really develop a timeline. And then from there, we start putting the pieces in place. So, you know, I'm an advocate. I think the best student loan repayment strategy is to become a practice owner as soon as possible. You know, so my goal, if someone says they want to be a practice owner, my goal for them is to have them start thinking about, you know, a 24 to 36 month timeline to become a practice owner. You know, they're coming out of school. They're at their peak of their ability to learn because they've been disciplined over, you know, 8 years. Dental school is a pretty, you know, I wouldn't have made it through dental school. I can tell you that. I'm not that disciplined in the studying department. So they're at the peak of their learning. So what I try to say is don't lose that edge. Take that foundation that you built over your dental school and possibly residency, and use that, your ability to learn, now transition that into learning how to become a practice owner, and carve out some of that time. You know, you're going to be working, you're going to have time and money to do some things that you might not have had time to do while you're in school, but leverage this foundation of learning that you've been able to develop, and put that, block off some time each week towards what do I need to learn and what do I need to do to get myself in a position to buy a practice in 24 to 36 months.
Gotcha. That makes a lot of sense. So my next question, you know, again, before we get into some more specifics, is talk to me, or talk to listeners really, about how COVID has really affected the student loan landscape. Because obviously, you know, the everything was shut down for a period of time. Some people couldn't even pay their mortgages and stuff like that. So talk to the listeners about what role COVID has played in this whole game.
Sure. So as most listeners probably know, if they have federal student loan debt, they've not had to make payments, and there's been no interest accrual, since March 13th of 2020. And as of right now, President Biden has extended the student loan relief from the previous administration to September 30th. And I think that's the first point. Couple of things is that, you know, I think there's some, obviously that financial aspect is great for borrowers. I think what it's highlighted in some cases, I feel that a lot of borrowers, when they graduate, they rush into refinancing too soon. So there were, let's say, thousands of graduates that refinanced their student loans in 2019. And they've had to make payments, and they've had interest rates anywhere from, let's say, 3 to 5% on their student loans accruing during all this period of time. and those in the federal program, you know, have not had any payments or interest accrual. So if the average dentist is graduating, you know, with $300,000 in student loan debt, and we have clients with much, much more than that, you know, a lot of borrowers have saved, you know, $20,000-$30,000 in terms of interest accrual since March 13th. So that's one thing I think people have learned, is that some people maybe rush to refinance. The other thing is obviously not necessarily a positive thing, is that people have kicked the can down the road a little bit. When it looked like student loan relief was ending on December 31st, and then it got pushed back to January 31st before President Biden announced his extension through September 30th, we had a rush of people, you know, emailing and calling us that had basically, you know, ignored their student loans. They didn't theoretically have to do anything. And so it was kind of out of sight, out of mind. And it's so, you know, one of the things I think people need to do is, this has been a great opportunity, and now it's been extended through September 30th to really get your ducks in a row. You know, don't kick the can down the road until August, you know, or early September. Use this time, that's this gift that's been given to borrowers, to really figure out, you know, what is going to be the best repayment strategy for me. You've got plenty of time to do that. So those are kind of the key points I would say. You know, COVID has also exposed, you know, kind of the underbelly that some folks didn't have adequate emergency savings. And so part of our planning process is, you know, initially to put aside about 3 months of living expenses. Now, we've been using that for years as kind of a first goal for emergency savings. And then we like to bump it up over time to about 6 months of emergency savings. You know, a lot of young professionals, maybe without any finance background, used to be a little bit resistant on, why do I need to have 3 months of living expenses in a savings account that might only be earning 1%? Can I do something more, you know, sexy, and can I get a better rate of return on that? Most of those questions went away because a lot of dental professionals, as you know, especially younger ones, maybe they'd only been in practicing, or they were associates for the last, you know, year or so. Those were the first ones to get, you know, laid off or furloughed, you know, at the beginning of the, you know, the beginning of the pandemic. So having saved 3 months of living expenses proved to be very, very useful. So we don't know, you know, when these black swans are going to emerge. We don't know what the future holds. So having having a well thought out financial plan that provides you resources to navigate some of the curveballs life throws at you is really important.
Gotcha. Now, that's really good information you just provided. So let's you know, let's talk about some of the things we really wanted to get into in terms of the content. So as 2021 graduates approach graduation, what are some things they should be thinking about when it comes to, you know, student loans and planning perspectives?
Sure. So many of the 2021 graduates are already considering job offers, and or they're out poking around looking for a job. So the first thing I would advise them to do is leverage the resources that are out there, which are, there's a lot of organizations that will help them find a job. So you think of, you know, the let's say the large DSOs that come around to schools and vendor fairs when people could do live presentations and stuff. So those are resources. Those are looking to hire, you know, graduates. But then there's also organizations, transition specialists that help dentists, you know, acquire or sell practices. Those can be great resources to help find an associateship. We do a lot of joint marketing and presentations with an organization based out of Indianapolis called ddsmatch.com. And so they have offices scattered. That's just one organization, but they have offices scattered all over the country, and they They help graduates with placements, finding associateships, and then they're a great resource if you're looking to buy a practice. So, and there's a number of other organizations like that. You might have some resources in that area as well, Len, to talk about. But I would say, you know, it's not, you don't have, the graduate shouldn't have to feel like they have to go out and find that job all by themselves. There are resources to help them. The second thing, and this might sound odd, but most 2021 graduates, obviously last year, 2020, had zero income, right? They were in dental school, so they had little to no income. My advice is that they need to file a tax return that has a great big zero on the bottom of it. You can file electronic tax returns. I think it's February 12th is when those can be filed, the earliest date. And so I encourage them, every one of them, whether they had income or not, to file a federal tax return. And the reason for that is if an income-driven repayment plan becomes the appropriate first repayment option for them, that zero tax return can be used as the source document when applying for the plan. Otherwise, we have to use pay stubs and maybe an employment agreement that says what they're going to make. And we can maybe get into the weeds on why that's really, really important. But filing a 2020 tax return as soon as possible will be helpful to their student loan repayment planning. It will give them more options than they would otherwise have.
Gotcha. No, that makes sense. I know we talked a little bit about the changes in the federal student loans, the extension on things because of COVID, but what should dental borrowers do now in light of this relief that was given on student loans through 9/30/2021? I'm also curious, because during COVID, mortgages got, forbearance on. And I had spoken to a number of people about this. And, when you put things in forbearance, there's a lot of issues when it comes to, how it reports on the credit report. It looks like you aren't paying. So, can you kind of wrap it into a little bit of a conversation around what should borrowers do? What do they need to be aware of? If obviously they're not able to make some of the payments, talk about that.
Sure. So right now, if they have federal student loan debt, there's no payments and interest accruing. Some people get real concerned about credit scores and reporting agencies and stuff like that. That's not a major concern of mine. I don't consider that very much at all in terms of student loan debt. When I do financial planning for folks, we live in a society where if you need credit, you can pretty much get it no matter who you are. That's just the way it is. That's the culture we live in. Dennis, I have clients that were able to go get a mortgage, $300,000-$400,000 mortgage on a home using their employment agreement before they even spent one day as a practicing dentist. So immediately after graduation, they walked into a bank, gave them their employment agreement, and the bank gave them $300,000-$400,000 to buy a house. So the point that I want to make on credit is that right now, borrowers, federal student loan borrowers, have a tremendous opportunity to do some other things that they would have otherwise been doing with that money, perhaps. So paying down credit card debt, though, to me, is the single biggest thing that they can do. I oftentimes get the question, should I be paying, even though my student loan interest isn't accruing and I don't have any payments to make perhaps until October, should I still be making some payments? Because, you can send money in and make student loans. And my first question is tell me what other debt you have. Because if you've got $15,000 on credit cards, accruing interest at 20% or more in some cases, then to me, that would be the thing to knock out. And so we have those conversations, but, and you might have had this before too, Len, but, you know, right now, a lot of the large banks have what's called doctor loans. And so if somebody's looking to buy a house, and I'm not saying that's the best idea immediately out of school, but if that's what they decide to do, most of the banks, you know, if you've got a decent income and you don't have a, they're gonna lend you the money to buy a house. Same thing with a practice. Many of the banks are going to give you 100%. If the practice cash flows, you probably won't get that right out of dental school. But after a year or so of production, you know, I think the banks are more than willing to give practice loans. That's been the experience that I've observed of my clients that have graduated and then sought to buy a practice.
Gotcha. No, and again, I think that all is very good information you're providing to those. Look, you know, the majority of people do have student loans, so I think they're probably listening to this. And if they aren't, if they're worried about it, they now know there's a resource out there to assist them. So, you know, one of the things I talk about is marketing, and marketing is not a silver bullet. It's not a one-day thing you do. And it sounds like student loan repayment is similar. It's not a one-time event or transaction. So you have to get it into your overall financial planning that you're doing. So, you know, one question I have is when should people start to really put these planning into effect? Because look, when you're in dental school, you know, you don't know necessarily where you're going to live. You don't know where you're going to, you know, what if you want to, you know, associate, or you want to end up being an owner. There's a lot of misunderstood things, or nothing that's really, everything's incomplete, I guess you can say. So, you know, I think there's a lot of uncertainty out there. So, you know, when do you want someone to start putting a financial plan together that helps alleviate or deal with some of these repayment issues? Hi, everyone. Dr. Len Tao of the Raving Patients Podcast. I hope you're enjoying this episode. I want to also thank you for being a dedicated listener, especially during COVID. I wanted to introduce our newest sponsor, Get Practice Growth. If you're looking for new and innovative marketing strategies to drive high-value patients to your practice, I strongly suggest you check them out. I've personally worked with them on multiple projects for my private practice and think they do outstanding work. We all know how important video marketing is now and in the future, and that's exactly what they specialize in. GPG will send a film crew to your practice and then use that video to build beautiful websites and highly engaging marketing campaigns. The best part is they have this patient loop software, which integrates with your practice management software and magnifies the new patient data most important to practice owners, which are new leads and where they came from, number of appointments booked, number of appointments completed, and the production those new patients have brought into your practice. You want to engage your patients and verify the results. So please, if you're interested in learning more about Get Practice Growth, reach out to Evan and Pete and let them know you heard about them on the Raving Patients Podcast. Thanks, and enjoy the rest of this episode.
Great question. So I think the optimal time is right now, for example, for 2021 graduates, because they're starting to look for jobs. So I have a number of clients that when we first start working with them, they've decided that they want professional help to build a financial plan. They want to work with somebody that has the experience that can help them navigate and guide them to the right decision with respect to student loan repayment, help them prioritize. And so as you're looking for a job, we have clients that say, I've got an offer from a public health facility, so I could go public service loan forgiveness route. But I also have this DSO and this private practice owner. So I've got three different offers here. You know, what should I do? You know, and so we have those conversations. Well, what did you think? Did you have a gut feeling? You know, you said you wanted to be a practice owner, but so maybe public health, you know, are you willing to go into public health for 10 years and then be a practice owner? Or were you seeing yourself be a practice owner sooner than 10 years? So a lot of what we do is really kind of help them hone in on, you know, what it really is that they want to see their career unfold, and then put the plan together based on that. You know, I can make anything look great on a spreadsheet, right? But if they're not, if it's, if their heart isn't in public health, then they probably shouldn't be in public health. I don't care if they have $700,000 in student loan debt. If their heart's not in it, they shouldn't go to public health. On the flip side, you know, somebody that has $200,000 in student loan debt, but they want to live in a rural community, and they want to, and they really see value in public health, and that's where their heart is, then that's what they should do. So, so everybody's plan is really should be based on where their heart is and kind of where they want to see their career.
Okay. All right. I mean, I think, again, you're talking about a situation that many dentists, dental students, you know, residents are facing right now. And I think that's a big crossroads, because I think it, you know, a lot of it determines, you know, what they're going to do in the future. You know, again, not something I'm very familiar with, but, you know, talk about the pros and cons of the federal repayment programs versus, you know, private refinancing options that are available to people who have student debt.
Sure. So there's within the federal program, and that's where most borrowers, you know, where they have their largest amount of debt is through the federal program. There's what's called income-driven repayment. So income-driven repayment, there's primarily two repayment plans that listeners should do their research on. One is called pay as you earn. And the other one is called revised pay as you earn. Pay as you earn is really more for someone coming out of school, student loan debt, and perhaps they're married, their spouse has a good income. Pay as you earn allows you to file your taxes on a, if you file your taxes on a separate basis, so you're married but you file your taxes separately, the income-driven repayment, the monthly amount would be based on your sole tax return and not on your household tax, not on your household income. So there are situations where that could be appropriate. The revised pay-as-you-earn plan is a great plan. Really like that a lot. The thing about the revised pay-as-you-earn plan is that it can provide a very significant interest subsidy. So we have a number of clients that might graduate from dental school. The average interest rate on their student loans might be 6.5%. Under normal circumstances, if actually interest was accruing, we've been able to get them enrolled in that plan. And in that first year or so out of school, their effective interest rate after the federal subsidy can be as low as 3.25%. So the federal program's income-driven repayment is they basically look at your income. And so that's why I encouraged this year's graduates to file their 2020 return. And if it's a zero on there, they're going to set up the first year of payments based on zero income.
Interesting.
If you don't have a tax return, then they're going to ask for pay stubs and et cetera. So let's say a starting dentist makes $130,000. They didn't file a tax return in 2020. When they enroll in that income-driven repayment plan, it's going to base the payments on $130,000, which is going to be around $900 a month.
Versus zero, which is significantly less.
Yes. And so a $900 payment basically costs you $450 a month in interest subsidy just off the top. So it's and it could be much larger, because if you have $400,000 of student loan debt at 6%, that's $24,000 in the first year of interest. Many of our clients who get enrolled in revised pay as you earn, their interest accrual in that first 12 months is $12,000, not $24,000. So that's kind of an misunderstood concept. And the loan servicers are not very good at pointing those things out. And unfortunately, a lot of students graduate, they call their loan servicer and say, "Hey, I've graduated, you know, what should I do?" They go through a couple of the options that are available. Pay as you earn is a 20-year repayment. Revised pay as you earn is a 25-year repayment. So let me ask you, you know, would you like to have your loans you know, so you make 20 years of payments, and then they forgive the balance after 20 years, although it's taxable, or 25 years you make payments, and then the balance is forgiven. So my view is that there's thousands of people, thousands of graduates that kind of got pushed into pay as you earn, did not get any interest subsidy, and they should have been on revised pay as you earn, at least for the first couple of years out of school. So we try to point out, we try to educate them on the different plans that are available. We try to make sure that the payment amount fits into their budget and is consistent with their career path. So, for example, let's say someone wants to be a practice owner in 2 or 3 years. So they found a, and let's say that they're going to need to walk into a bank and get a $1 million loan to do that. So how are they best positioned to get that $1 million loan looking out 2 or 3 years? You know, frankly, the bank is going to look really long and hard on, you know, does this practice cash flow? That's going to be probably the biggest decision that the bank is going to make is, you know, can we expect to get our money back? Are they able to make a payment? The second thing they're going to look at is their, you know, the borrower's financial history and what their monthly nut is. You know, if they've got a student loan payment of $5,000 a month, as opposed to $1,500 a month, you know, the bank is going to, you know, the bank would rather you have a $1,500 a month student loan payment than a $5,000 a month student loan payment. So this is one of the things that I counsel clients on who want to be practice owners is don't rush to refinance your student loans. The nominal yield or the nominal interest rate might be lower than what the nominal rate is on your federal student loans, but if you qualify for an interest subsidy in the first couple of years, you're probably going to be just fine staying in the, you know, on an income-driven repayment plan. And then when you walk into the bank in 2 or 3 years, the bank isn't going to care if you go in and say, well, I graduated with $500,000 in student loan debt, but I really worked hard the last 2-3 years, and I paid that down to $450,000. But I don't have any liquidity. The bank is going to be more interested to see that you've saved up $50,000. You're making your student loan payments. It's $1,500 a month instead of $5,000. So those are the kind of conversations we have to make sure that they get in the right position. I think too many people, jump on the refinance wagon, and I understand there's millions of dollars of advertising and ads that get pushed into their Facebook page and, you know, from all the different private refinances. And frankly, some of my competitors don't have a whole lot, not too many people doing student loan repayment planning, but some of my competitors get kickbacks from the lending agencies. I'm a fiduciary, so I don't get a bonus. You know, my recommendation, if I recommend it's time for you to refinance your student loan debt, it's because I think it's the right thing to do, not because I'm getting paid $500 to refer you to someone to do that.
Gotcha. No, that makes sense. That was one of the things I was going to ask you. And so I did do, because I'm not as up on this topic as some of the other topics, I did do some research before we got on this call. And I was on a website and they talked about 5 strategies for dentists to pay off their student loans. And I was curious as to which one of these is usually, I know every case is different. So this is more of a generic question, but I'll list you that they have pursued dental school debt forgiveness. That's number one. And they say that's best for dentists working in the public or nonprofit sector or in an underdeserved areas. We talked a little bit about that. Refinance to pay off your dental school loans fast. You just talked about refinancing, and that's best for private practice dentists who want to save on interest. And then you have stick with the standard repayment plan, and that's for dentists whose payments are manageable. You can enroll in an income-driven repayment, which is dental residents, dentists with excessive debt, or dentists working in the public sector. And then last but not least is defer loan payments during residency. So that's what they say are the 5 strategies for dentists to pay off student loan debt. What are your thoughts on what I just read to you?
I'd say that number 2 and number 5 are missing a component. because most dental residents, except for, I guess, orthodontists, get some income during residency. And so, and many residency programs are actually nonprofits. So you can kill two or three birds with one stone here. If you, I've got a client, she's in Virginia, she's in residency, it's a nonprofit. So while she's been going to residency, she's been enrolled in income-driven repayment. She's on the revised pay-as-you-earn plan, which means that during residency, she would have had a big chunk of her interest subsidized by Uncle Sam. So, I mean, again, there's no interest during COVID, but under normal years, if you just defer payments in residency, you just have 6.5% of interest accruing on those loans unnecessarily. I would say that you, there's no reason why you shouldn't get at least 50%, you shouldn't get roughly 50% of your interest subsidized during residency, at least in year one on the revised pay as you earn if you came out of dental school with no income. And then if you're only getting paid $40,000-$50,000 in residency, you're going to have a very, very low student loan payment, which means you're going to qualify for maybe 40% interest subsidy or something like that.
Gotcha.
There was a sixth strategy. I was waiting for you. I was like, oh, he's going to give the fifth strategy. I thought was going to be the tax bomb strategy. So I would have added, there's another strategy called, and some of my competitors recommend it a lot, which is you make minimal payments on an income-driven repayment plan for 20 or 25 years. You invest the difference, which means, you know, the difference between paying off your student loans in 10 years versus 20 or 25. And you say you invest the difference. And then at the end, if there's anything left over, you got this tax bill, you've got this big bucket of money you've been saving over the years to pay down those taxes. And I'm not an advocate of the tax bomb strategy at all under, you know, 95% of circumstances. I think it's a horrible idea, not just a bad idea. It's a horrible idea. And the fact is that life throws a lot of curveballs at people. And let's just say a 50-50 proposition today is divorce. So, you know, in America, roughly 50% of marriages end in divorce. And so while a tax bomb strategy could look really good on a spreadsheet, you know, make minimum payments and save the difference. Now, you'd think as an investment guy whose primary source of income comes from investment management, I'd be all over that strategy, right? Because clients would send me more money to invest and I'd get paid more to do that. But I know that if 50% of marriages end in divorce, so what happens in divorce? You know, if you get on an income-driven repayment plan, in the first several years of that plan, your student loan debt is actually growing. You're only paying a fraction of the interest accrual. Or maybe after two or three years, you're paying just the interest and maybe a tiny fraction of the principal. So 5, 6, 7, 8 years after graduation, in many cases, your student loan balance on an income-driven repayment plan is higher than the day you graduated. So let's say at that point, you're married, you've got a practice, you got a couple of kids, and unfortunately, you go through a divorce. And that's, let's say, a 50-50 proposition. I hate to say it, but it is. Okay, so what's going to happen then? You have to buy out your ex from the practice, possibly. Is your ex going to be responsible for half your student loan debt? Very, very, very unlikely. You might have child support and alimony to pay. So would you have rather paid off your student loan debt or at least paid a significant amount of it down with marital assets in the first 7, 8, 10 years out of school? Or would you rather be left with half of your assets or less probably in divorce if you're the practice owner in this situation, half of your assets and a larger student loan balance 10 years after you graduated? So I'm not a big fan of the tax bomb strategy. I was in the military and learned to respect and avoid bombs whenever possible.
That's funny. So this was really, really good information. So as I told you in the beginning, I like to do these icebreakers or these pod decks that ask some questions. So I'm gonna run you through these 10 lightning round questions, and then we'll do our wrap. So this is called Would You Rather. And nothing inappropriate. I like to always like to point out these are all appropriate questions. So question number one, and again, it's pretty basic stuff here. Would you rather be handcuffed to the most annoying person you know for 24 hours or go camping with someone who likes you but you don't like back?
Go camping.
Go camping. Okay. Would you rather put ketchup or ranch dressing on everything you eat?
Ketchup.
Ketchup on everything you eat. Okay. Yes. How about, would you rather be able to erase people's memory or predict their future?
Predict their future.
All right. Would you rather blow your nose with sandpaper or use bubble wrap instead of toilet paper?
I'll go the sandpaper route.
Okay. Actually, when I asked that one, everybody says toilet paper, but hey, everybody has their own answer for a reason. So would you rather have no eyebrows or an extra finger?
I would rather have an extra finger, I guess. Yeah.
I'd rather have an extra finger. Well, because people won't be able to see right in your head, and that's the first thing people look at. So would you rather blow up 100 balloons or lick 500 envelopes?
500 envelopes. I've done a lot of mass mailings over the years, and you know that taste kind of draws you over time. I think I miss it.
Okay. Would you rather be able to record your thoughts or your dreams while you sleep?
Thoughts or dreams? Thoughts or dreams? Probably my thoughts. Yeah.
Okay. Would you rather have your face printed on money or your own small town named in your honor?
Well, money's not worth that much anymore since they're printing it like crazy. So I'd rather have a town named after me, I guess.
Okay.
Probably last longer.
All right. Would you rather abolish war or find a cure for every type of cancer?
I would abolish cancer, find a cure for cancer. Yeah.
Okay. And last one, which I always ask to everybody, would you never be able to use search engines again? Or never use your smartphone apps again?
I'd rather not have access to smartphone apps.
Okay. Hey, that's always
search engines are just amazing.
Yeah, so powerful. So everybody has a very different answer to that too. Well, that was fun. Thank you for allowing me to quiz you on that. So Mark, how could people get in touch with you if they're interested in learning more about what you can help them with? If they're listening to this and saying, you know, I have all this student loan debt, what do I do? What's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
Great. So the best way to get in touch with us is to go to our website at studentloansrx.com, studentloansrx.com. And up in the top right-hand corner, you click on the free consult button and you would get a 30-minute consultation, most likely with myself or one of my other partners, but I do most of the consultations, and it's a 30-minute consultation. We do a Zoom session, and that's the best way to get a hold of us. Visit our website and schedule that free consult. It's no obligation. You get to pick my brain for 30 minutes. We talk about your career path and what you'd like to do and what are some of those options, and then they can make a decision as to whether or not, you know, they think we can help them by creating a plan, or if they want to, you know, attempt to do that themselves.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Awesome. So thank you very much for joining me, Mark. This was very informative to someone even like myself, who again, doesn't have anything to really worry about when it comes to this. But guys, if you want to learn more about what Mark does, please reach out to him. If you are sitting there ripping your hair out of your head because of all the student loan debt and managing it all and managing the home and the car and the family and everything else, definitely give Mark a call. Mark gave you his contact information. If you enjoyed this episode, please, you know, share it amongst yourselves. Tell your colleagues who you know may be in some major debt to reach out to Mark as well. But, you know, share it, like it, subscribe to our podcast on Apple's podcasting networking. And as you always remember, I end these episodes with two words, even though we weren't based on reviews here. Remember, your reputation matters. Mark, thanks again for being such a great guest, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. My pleasure, Len.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Raving Patients Podcast. For more information about Dr. Leonard Tao's online reputation management services, please visit theravingpatientspodcast.com. In the meantime, give us some feedback by leaving a review at the podcast source of your choice. We'll see you next time on the Raving Patients Podcast.